Welcome to the show.
Lay.
Sir. Laser show.
Tim and Paul.
Remember what's going on. I'm out of my mind half the time anyways.
Hello and welcome to episode 159 of Fireside Chats, the first spring training edition of what will be a hopefully weekly podcast covering the Boston Red Sox from the folks at Firebrand of the American League, firebrandal.com, a member of the Blogwin Blog Network. I'm Tim DeLoisio. He's Paul Testa. Paul, there's been lots of snow. There's been lots of ice damming. I've been up on the roof shoveling. It's hard to believe that the Red Sox are actually in Fort Myers, and pitchers and catchers have reported, and there is baseball being talked about and played and moves being made.
Yeah, it's not snowing here, not where I am. I don't know what – it was a picture of you on a roof shoveling. I mean, I don't know what's going
on. It's a mess up here. It's like the fact that we could convince any free agent to come to Boston right now is a miracle, Paul. So, Paul, obviously the big news of this week was the Red Sox signing an investment in the 19-year-old Cuban sensation, Yoan Moncada. We'll call him a shortstop for now, although who knows what position he's likely to be, and that'll probably be topic of conversation, today, is to where he fits in with his organization over the long term. But I think that this signing opens up a really good way for us to talk about this team in 2015 here, because really is this a team that is being built for this year? Or is this a team that's being built for this year as a bonus year and multiple years to come, as where Ben Cherington looks like he's hoping to field a contender? I think there's really some short-term, long-term stuff going on with the way the pitching staff has been built, the type of talent that's been brought into this organization. Clearly, big-name free agents, Hanley Ramirez, Pablo Sandoval, feel like win-now pieces, right?
Right.
But then you've got no
or
ace,
now.
Right? Or eat now. Fair point. But and then you've got no, this whole argument of no ace on the staff. That's a not win now type of mentality. Not investing in John Lester. Not win now type of mentality, according to some. An investment in Rusny Castillo and Yoan Moncada out of Cuba for big dollars over a longer period of time feel like you've got unpolished players that maybe are win later pieces. Where do you think this organization, Ben Cherington and team, sit on the fence of win now versus win later? Obviously, both being the most acceptable answer.
Yeah, well, that is the answer, right?
But can you do both? I mean, are they positioned
absolutely
to try and do both?
Absolutely, they've positioned themselves to do both. I mean, the biggest issue where it's not win now, in my opinion, is the pitching staff, right? We don't have Cole Hamels. We don't have John Lester. You know, we are all of a sudden, and I hate that I have to give this guy credit for it, but, Tony Maserati said it, and I've been screaming it, like, to myself since this whole entire offseason started to unfold. This just screams closer by committee back in 2003 when they're like, yeah, you don't need a true closer. Well, yeah, you do. You need a true closer. You need – I believe you need an ace. Now, I say that maybe Porcello becomes the ace. Maybe he takes that leap this year. Maybe Joe Kelly, who's saying he's going to win the Cy Young, pitches like he can. I mean, he showed signs of greatness last year for four innings, and maybe he can piece it all together. I don't know, but I'd feel a lot more comfortable in the win now mode if we did have that ace, and we don't. Now, when you look at the signings of Castillo and
Moncada.
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 that is certainly down the road. That's like building this team. That's that now these guys are in place for the departures of a potential Mike Napoli, a departure of a Shane Victorino, like these things going down the road. We're plugging in these pieces. So, yeah, Ben Cherington is looking to win now, obviously, and definitely is planning for the future. They're investing in younger players versus older players, and that's always, you know, with the mind towards the future.
And, you know, I think it's interesting that the thought of closer by committee and that comparison. I mean, I think to me the biggest difference is to why it's on the face a very valid comparison, in that you're gambling that multiple players can fill the role of one very needed role, right? I think the difference with closer by committee and starter or ace by committee is the closer comes in at that moment, right? They need to perform to win that game, or to save that game. You have to put the right closer in that situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you make a mistake, the game's over, essentially, right? Then that's what happened in 2003. Is you never found that guy that could close out games. Now, you couldn't survive. You can't survive a failure in closer by committee. Now, with starters, it doesn't matter. Like, if you get an ace performance out of Porcello this week or for 2 weeks, and then Buchholz for 3 weeks, and this, it's much less damaging, right? If you have someone performing at an ace level of your five, and the other four are at a decent level as well, it's much less damaging because you don't have to name an ace, right? They're all pitching in rotation. You just need a stopper. You need to stop losing streaks. You need to eat innings, right?
But
But you can get in. This is not talking about the playoffs, right? Which is much different. That's where you start.
No, I'm talking regular season.
Regular season. As long as you've got someone pitching like an ace, then you've got an ace. If you can't say that with a closer, you can't have someone pitching like a closer. They have to be the closer. They have to be the last person to have the ball at the end of the game. When we had Daniel Bard pitching like a closer, he was not a closer. You know, that, to me, that's the difference.
Well, yeah, I mean, I get your point. I guess what I would say is you're assuming at any given time one of these five is going to be pitching like an ace.
Well, that's absolutely the assumption. Although
do we have five number twos or do we have five number fours? Like that's what I don't understand.
This is what they're gambling on. I mean, this is the biggest risk.
A pretty risky gamble.
You know, it certainly is. I mean, and this is where I would say that their perspective is, and this is what they've said, is that each of the five pitchers, or not maybe Kelly less so than the other four, have shown significant periods of, you know, of dominant pitching, like 10 starts or more in a row where they have been, you know, a number one caliber pitcher, right? But that's been the window. It hasn't extended past that. You know, so I think they feel confident that these guys have the ability in them. And I would think that their scouts and their player development staff feel really confident in one or two of them, right? Or else they wouldn't. That this is not a risk that they'd be willing to take.
Well, I mean, do I want Joe Kelly on my team? Do I want Justin Masterson on my team? Do I want Clay Buchholz on my team? Do I want Miley on my team? The answer is yes to all that. But I also want the guy that I know and that, you know, I think these guys are great pitchers. I think they can do it. I just think there's a potential that you're not going to have that stopper, that guy that can come in and kill the, you know, you're on a three-game losing streak and come in and just throw eight dominant innings and put you right back on track.
Yeah, that's the biggest risk right now, Paul. I mean, that's the thing that is the most uncertain piece of this team heading into the year. And, you know, I guess the question is, how much do you, and this goes into the signing of Moncada and the prospects and the offense is, how much are you willing to risk or pay to mitigate that risk you have with your starting staff now, right? Like, do you know, obviously they don't look at Betts or Swihart as a price that they're willing to pay.
And I'm not I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that they should do that. And I'm all in. First of all, Swihart, I don't want anyone. Like, I'm high on him. I think he could be
the next Will Middlebrooks.
No, he could be Buster Posey. Like, I mean, he really could. I mean, an offensive catcher that is a good catcher, a good game caller, you know, is so rare. So I don't touch that. I mean, I think, you know, Betts, I don't want anyone trading him too. But now you look at the whole outfield and everything that we got. I mean, are we going to play five outfielders in, like, just one?
I think that's a great segue, Paul, because to me the outfield, like, Moncada and that conversation is going to have a lot to do with what happens with the infield going forward, or supposedly. I mean, he could be as – I mean, we could find him in the outfield as well.
Right.
He's young and athletic, so let's not rule that out. But right now, when you look, especially with the comments from John Farrell this week about Shane Victorino being the incumbent, if you will.
What else are you going to say?
I agree. I think that a lot has been made in sports talk radio about that statement where – He didn't really have any other choice but to say that. And I think Victorino knows what that meant is you're going to have an opportunity to win your job back, right? And I think Mookie Betts knows what that meant is we've got to defer to the older guy, but this is an open competition for spots in the outfield. And if you perform in the spring, you're going to get one of those spots. Now, what I think is, like, let's just go through the players. Obviously, Hanley is under the monster. That's the only position in my mind.
The only one that's not an outfielder is guaranteed an outfield position.
That's a great point. I didn't think of it that way before. But yes, the only the only person – has he played an inning in the outfield?
Never. I don't believe
he has. So the only outfielder that has never played an infield an inning in the outfield is penciled in as the only definite outfielder. Okay, so let's put Hanley in left because I think that's a given. He's not going anywhere else. The people that are saying, okay, you can trade Bogarts for Hamels because Hanley can come play short. I really don't think you want to see Hanley Ramirez playing shortstop anymore.
No, you don't. Like, you don't. And plus, I mean, it his body and the time he gets injured, it's the absolute worst position. You're going to have a hamstring pull or a bad back like three games into the season.
And realistically, he's not – I mean, we have Sandoval at third, but Hanley wouldn't be a third base option. Like, the only option is – outfielder DH for this guy, in my opinion,
right.
and they've got that space, so that's great. Hanley's penciled in. Now for the other two spots, right? You've got Rosny Castillo, Mookie Betts, Shane Victorino, Jackie Bradley Jr.,
Alan
Craig, Daniel Nava. Now I'll move Nava out and say that he's got a roster spot because he's your left-handed bat off the bench. He can play first and outfield, right? First being the left-handed replacement for Mike Karp, for example, he can back up Napoli. I think Nava will craft, you know, a spot in this roster because of his flexibility to play, you know, a couple of positions and first base and be lefty. But we could take him out of the mix. He's not one of the people in the starting conversation.
He's a bench player. Right?
He's your bench player. I think that impacts Alan Craig because can you have Alan Craig and Daniel Nava on the same team at the same time?
Plays outfield and can play first. But no, you can't.
Right.
Like, this is why Nava might be, you know, this is why Nava potentially would be moved. You know,
who would you rather trade for if you're a trading partner? The Red Sox pay some of Alan Craig's salary, and you get Alan Craig, or you get Daniel Nava?
Alan Craig, to me, last year's the anomaly, and the 3 years prior is what Alan Craig is. And this is a bad foot injury that the guy had and wasn't being able to put any type of pressure on it.
Yep.
So I don't – and he makes $6 million a year for a guy that, you know
– Well, I think it's more than that now. I think – what is it?
I think it's six, to be honest.
I thought it was up like nine or ten, but I can't remember. The contract surprised me, whatever it was. It was a little bit more than I thought. I could be totally wrong on that.
I'm going to look it up right now.
Yeah,
but,
I could be wrong. But
my point is that guy is someone I think that hit 1,006 with runners in scoring position in the year, you know, a year prior. I mean,
they said it over the last three seasons. He was the best clutch hitter, close and late, and runners in scoring position in baseball.
Yeah, he signed a 5-year, $31 million contract. So,
but it's but it was backloaded. So that 531, like the Red Sox are on the hook for like 3 and 26 of it, or something like that. I could be totally wrong, but I feel like it was.
No, you're right. You're right. It goes $5.5 million this year, $9 million, $11 million, and then a $13 million option or a $1 million buyout. So yeah, it significantly escalates over the next 2 years. This year he's only $5.5 million.
Yeah, so that's not bad. I mean, I think, but back to my point is, if you're looking at a trade candidate between those two, and you're the person buying. Wouldn't you, based on your perception of Alan Craig, you would rather have Alan Craig, right? If you're the team acquiring one of those guys.
Right, so why am I paying any of his contract?
I was just trying to equal out the money so it wasn't an issue between Nava and Craig. You know, like, I'm basically saying, I think
and
Craig
I would
is
want,
more
I mean,
tradable.
If I'm Oakland, I mean, a team like Oakland or something like that, you know, like, Daniel Nava is a great player.
And I actually think, as far as fit on this Red Sox team, Nava is a better fit than Craig.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't – like, Craig's not going to break into the starting outfield.
He could. I mean, he's not going to break into the
starting outfield. Let's talk it through.
Maybe Mike Napoli doesn't, like, rebound from the surgery. You know, would you rather have Alan Gregg as your everyday first baseman, or you rather have Daniel Nava? Those are the things that I look at. Or do you want Alan Craig to be someone that can spell Napoli for – 2 games a week or a game a week, spread someone in the outfield 2 or 3 times a week, and you get 400, 500 bats, or do you want Nava to do that? I'd rather have Craig do that. I understand your point of the benefit of the lefty and everything that Nava has done. Yeah.
See, I think Nava's a better balance for this team, spelling Napoli at first, for example, right? I mean, I just think he's...
Well, put it like this. Let's say they go with Betts, you know, because I get what you're saying, but... Alan Craig is the type of player that can play his way from a role position to an everyday lineup. So let's say that they go with Victorino, and Victorino's struggling, or he gets traded, and then they go with Betts, and then Betts is struggling. Do you want Nava to be the 140-game replacement, or do you want Alan Craig to be that person? Craig every single time on
it's
that.
You know, like, I'm really confident in Daniel Nava's ability to be a positive impact offensively on this team. I mean, and, I think 2013 showed it. He was,
and the years prior did. And I just
think the difference between Nava and Craig is not it's not huge. It's less than it looks like. I think Nava's a very underrated offensive player, and especially if you pigeonhole him to the left side. I mean, I think his value, you know, jumps tremendously if he's used in those situations only. Now, I hear you. If Victorino and Betts were both out of action, and you want it, you know, who would you rather have as your everyday? Ooh, where's he going to play? He's going to play in Alan Craig's going to play right field.
Yeah, or left. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, he would have to play.
We've seen Daniel Nava play right field, and he actually acquitted himself decently. Right, like you want Alan Craig playing right field at Fenway Park? I don't know.
I don't.
I mean,
know.
I think that's what we're talking about.
I haven't
about.
Seen him enough in the field to really make that.
I think we're on the fringe.
I want his bat over Daniel Nava's. That's me.
Yeah, fair
I get what Daniel Nava is. Here's the thing. Alan Craig comes up. I get the feeling like there could be a home run. There could be a double off the wall. There could, you know, you get that present. When Daniel Nava comes up, I never got that feeling ever. He's produced, he's done it, but I never really got that feeling.
You never knew there was a line drive to the gap? That's what I see. When I see Daniel Nava up, I'm like, there's a line drive to the gap right here. No, I'm kidding. I'm exaggerating, I should say. I think that, you know, between those two guys, what I think we can agree on is one of those two guys is going to play a significant role on this team as a role player, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one will be a big question mark. Whether it's Alan Craig is the role player, and then what do you do with Nava? Because, you know, does he go back to AAA? Do you deal him? Like, what? You know, or Nava is the role player, and Alan Craig is too good to be a bit piece. He's not good enough to get a big return for. Can you drum up interest for him? You know, like, yeah, I think that becomes a question we'll see play out now. Let's move upstream a little bit, right? Because obviously the big battles are for center and right field between Castillo, Betts, Victorino, and Bradley.
Yeah, that's it. Well, no.
Because he's in the mix so far as if he were to come out of spring hitting, I think he plays himself into the center field mix because of how much they value his defense. I mean, Farrell went on record saying today he's the best defensive center fielder in baseball.
No doubt about that.
But if he's hitting and he's the best defensive player, like, don't you have
because
to try
you just
and
have
room?
Flexibility? Either this team's going to make some bold moves in the spring and trade the likes of a Daniel Nava, Shane Victorino, Mookie Betts, maybe to get a Cole Hamels, which I still don't want that trade. They have to get rid of three people before you can look at Jackie Bradley Jr. and say, "I can stash you down in the minors." They're not going to get rid of a
very
they're not going to cut Alan Craig or cut Shane Victorino
agree.
Or
totally
cut
agree.
Daniel Nava just so that Jackie Bradley it sucks. He's just in a terrible situation, but he put himself in the situation
totally
from how he hit last year. That's not going to happen until moves are made. He's in the minors
he's
unless
the
some
most
moves
likely
are...
to start in the minors. Absolutely. Yeah. Now I'll say if
he's the only
if,
one I think can. I don't think you can
no,
send Nava
Betts,
down to the minors.
Well, I don't know about Nava, but Betts and Castillo both have options.
Yes. So you can send both of them down. So then you'll have the most dynamic outfield in the history of outfields.
Pawtucket/Providence,
right?
Look, I mean, realistically, here what I think is going to happen, and this is what the Reds, I think Charrington and team have planned, is that it's Hanley, Castillo, Betts. Boom, boom, boom.
Then you have to. I mean, you have to trade. Who's going to trade for Victorino? Victorino's not going to be a bench player.
I mean,
he could be a bench player, but then you get run into the same problem with Nava, Craig, and all of that. Like,
totally agree.
This is what's so confusing about this team is like this team. If this team stays as constituted now, like with the veterans, this team that you see in April is not going to be the team you see in June. Like.
Right.
There's got to be so many moving parts that happen or injuries that happen that this team constructed the way it is today works because there's just too many there's too many millions that are going to be potentially sitting on the bench and unhappy and really making the clubhouse probably a miserable place to be, which is
Here's a question for you. I'm just thinking this through. If Victorino's your starting right fielder, right? And Castillo's your starting center fielder because I really think with the money that's invested in Castillo and from what I hear about his major league ready ability, right now is that he's brought into play this year like that he's going to start in center field this season.
Well, we're paying him. $10 million. He's not in Pawtucket. He's the center fielder.
I totally agree. I think you pencil him as the center fielder. Even if he's struggling out of the gate in spring and Betts and Victorino are both playing well, I just don't see Castillo not getting the nod out of the gate, right? So if that's the case, and say Victorino has a good spring, and you've got Betts, would you rather have Betts as a fourth outfielder and Jackie Bradley Jr. down in Pawtucket? Or would you rather have Jackie Bradley Jr. as your fourth outfielder and Betts getting regular reps building in Pawtucket?
Tough, very tough decision.
See, I think if Betts doesn't get the nod, I would rather have Jackie Bradley Jr. up here.
Well, doesn't Bradley Jr. need reps too? That's the whole thing. Like these guys could be playing every day.
But he's the guy that do you ever see? Is he where's his long term position? If
he's
a part of this team. Right, long term, and you think he's the more everyday player, then Jackie Bradley Jr. slots in as a fourth outfielder, and that's all he'll ever be with this team unless he gets dealt somewhere down the road. So make him your fourth outfielder.
He's got to be dealt. I mean that's there's so many deals that have to happen. Like this team is just it's sitting there with like deals that need to be made with really. People that they don't necessarily want now that need playing time to show that they can play so that other teams want them. Like it's just an odd situation. Like this, sadly enough, I'm going to say some things that are blasphemy right here. And I don't necessarily agree with them, but this team as constructed if you really want to boil it down to, is better without Mike – not better, but it would be a lot easier decisions without people like Mike Napoli and David Ortiz, because you can slot two different people into those roles.
Yeah, but you don't have you're not going to slot people better than those people into those roles.
No, I'm not saying – that's what I'm saying. There's just such a logjam, because when you have outfielders, there's really only one of two other – they can play first base usually,
yeah,
and they can DH.
True.
So, like, that's it. And these two guys are – Napoli is probably gone at the end of the year. David Ortiz is going to be bitching about a contract in about 4 days. And that he's disrespected, so we're going to sign him for another 3 years. So, like, this problem's not going away unless you trade off the assets. I guess that's the only point that I'm making.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's interesting you said assets. I mean, this team, while we're bitching a little bit about how everything comes together, you know, it's an advantageous position to have these assets. Now, showcasing what their abilities are so that they're tradable assets is the problem here, right? And that's what we
right, because no one puts any stock in.
You gotta get people don't trust that Victorino can play and can be healthy, right?
And if Victorino hits 500 in spring training, they're still not going to believe that. Like, I mean, they're going to have to see it on a regular. That's my point. The only tradable assets right now are the people that we don't want to trade,
young
which
ones,
are
right?
The young ones.
So like, Mookie Betts, right now, you think you could deal Betts with. I'll throw Henry Owens in there, and I know you'll say don't do that deal, but let's just say right now you could deal Betts and Owens for Cole Hamels. That's the deal that Philly wants.
Yeah, I don't do it. I would consider Betts and Vasquez. That's the deal that and maybe a Matt Barnes.
But so let's just say some combination with Betts as the is and some really good other talent that's not on the major league roster is the package for Hamels. I'm more inclined today to consider a Cole Hamels deal than I was 2 days ago, before the arrival of Yoan Moncada in this organization.
Right.
Right.
Why is that though? That's what I mean because we both agree that Moncada is not going to do anything this year. I think he's going to come up at some point this year.
I'll say because I think this is maybe going out on a limb, but like we've talked about, if you've got Victorino, Craig, and Nava as your three pieces for right field, Castillo in center, and Hanley in left, with Jackie Bradley Jr. as your emergency backup. I feel okay with. I feel for this year, I don't.
You can't keep all those guys on the team, though. Do you see?
I know, but what I'm saying is, I've eliminated Betts. I've traded him, and we're still saying we've got to find room for people, which means he's a great talent, but if you're not going to play him, he's an excess talent. And coming up in the organization next year, you've got more people. So like he is tradable now. Where before you had Moncada, you needed Betts next year, right? But I still don't think that they want to do that. I think they want Betts to be the leadoff guy this year. And if they had their 100%. Brothers, they would trade Victorino if they could. And look, I don't want to discount what Shane Victorino could be. If Shane Victorino is healthy and played like 2013 Shane Victorino, he's still the best defensive right fielder that I've seen in Fenway Park.
Yeah, well.
Right? I mean, his year was unbelievable. I think there's a very sour taste in our mouths from Shane Victorino last year.
I don't have a sour taste. The guy was hurt all last year. But
we're forgetting how impactful he was in what in 2013, and I think generally people don't believe that he could do that again. And I think that's kind of what he was his whole career. So, why couldn't he?
I think he could. I think he could be a value to another team as well.
I'm positioning what I'm thinking is I've discounted Shane Victorino's value to this team because I've assumed that Betts was going to take that job out of the gate. And the more
Shane Victorino is going to hit 275, 15 home runs. That's like a Shane Victorino year, 12, 15 home runs. Yeah, I'm perfectly fine getting rid of that.
And he bat leadoff?
And rolling the dice on – I don't think he likes it. I think he's a two guy, but I'd rather roll the dice on a Mookie Betts and get rid of Shane Victory. Like, or it's just right now, because he's a one-year contract. Like, these are contracts that move, like, at the end, at the trading deadline when you're in a rate. Like, it doesn't – it's just – it's a very tough situation. I think we sat and there were – everyone wants the prospects. We want to get rid of the veterans. And you just said it. We need to wait for injuries to happen in spring training, and people need these major league ready players right now. And I don't care what you get for them. Like,
yeah, that's the thing. Is like, if you were to trade Alan Craig right now and tell me that you got a double A reliever,
I don't care.
Fine.
Yeah.
That guy's
same with
be
Victorino.
Awesome.
Yeah, and Alan, you know, the only thing that like if Alan Craig goes out there, Victorino goes out there, and they have monster years or. I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with is trading a Mookie Betts and seeing 8 years of greatness go to another team.
Unless you get a Josh Beckett-like run from Cole Hamels in Boston with a World Series.
Yeah,
that's Hanley.
Was never high on the Hanley Ramirez trade. Like guy.
But wouldn't you do it again and again and again if it got you 2007 and Beckett's elevated performance for a good?
I'd have to go back and look. Josh Beckett did a lot of stuff. What free agents were out there that we could have just paid cash for and gotten a Josh Beckett-like performance? I don't know. I'd have to really do a lot of research on that.
My recollection is that there was not a lot, and especially I think Beckett as a Red Sox hit the low end of what his potential could have been as a starter.
When did he come? He came in 2006.
2006.
2006 sucked. 2007 was awesome. 2008 sucked. 2009 was good. 2010 sucked. Like, Josh Beckett wasn't the great. He had years when he was dominant. He was dominant, but he wasn't he wasn't Pedro. He wasn't Curt Schilling. He wasn't this Roger Clemens. He wasn't this guy that was dominant every single year. He had multiple.
Yeah,
period. Fuckitude.
He did. He had some definite bad times. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I look at it, just take 2007 in a vacuum, and...
Would have I traded...
Would you have traded
all
Hanley
these years
for
of
that
Hanley
one,
Ramirez
for that
one,
with that
one year of greatness? No, absolutely not. For
not
the World Series...
But let's just say you don't win the World Series without...
I don't care, because we won it in 2013. Like, I mean...
Well, I guess so that's the question is, how many years of a young prospect is worth a guaranteed World Series?
Well, you're assuming that trade guaranteed us
World
Series.
But in retrospect, it did, because...
No, it didn't, because it could have been... In 2007, we have to look at the years. Maybe there was an ace out there that... Maybe we traded for Cliff Lee, because Cliff Lee sucked in 2006. Maybe, you know, like, there's other things out there that didn't have to do Hanley Ramirez. I get that we had to trade Hernandez to get Beckett, and I don't fault that trade. But Mike Lowell was also a big part of that, and that was just a throw-in, you know. Like,
well, but I guess my, if you go back to the question, is if you knew right now, looking forward, right, that Cole Hamels in his 4 years in Boston was going to win one World Series, and it was going to cost you whatever Mookie Betts' career was, and let's assume it's a good career. Right.
No, you know what? I'm done with that. I'm totally done with the one World Series thing. I don't want that. I want to be the Yankees of the late 90s. I want to be the team. I want to be the Yankees of up until last year, the team that went to the postseason every year except once. That's what I want. I don't want last place, first place, last place anymore. I don't want, you know.
Relevance, irrelevance.
Yeah. So. I mean, even looking back, I mean, from 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, we didn't go to the playoffs. 2007, we won. 2008, I don't think we went to the playoffs.
We lost
the Rays. 2009, we didn't go to the playoffs. Or if we did, we got bounced.
No, we got bounced by the Angels.
And then, we had I want more of that, like more of the runs of like always in the postseason. So. Yeah, no, the one World Series, no, because I have my World Series.
Okay,
I waited
so now let me play
years.
It back to you a different way, right? We started the show saying, what's the one thing that this team really needs to compete right now is an ace.
Right.
Okay, if Cole Hamels is an ace, it's still not worth Mookie Betts.
In my opinion, no, because there's also the other trade. Ruben Amaro is like got his head up his ass. Like,
yes.
Just because you watch Mookie Betts and he did well doesn't mean you have the right to ask for him for Cole Hamels or a guy that you're paying $20-something million a year that you don't want to pay, because we can put together a package with Jackie Bradley Jr., yeah, a package Matt Barnes. If you want to throw Henry Owens in it, you can throw Henry Owens in it. I don't necessarily want to do that, but it doesn't have to be the guy that we're banking to be our leadoff hitter for the next 10 years.
Right.
Like, we have a very good farm system. It doesn't have to be Blake Swihart, who is, you know, known to be the next future, I mean, the next big catcher to come up. You don't have to do that.
Amaro right now is ridiculous. And you know, you wonder as the season goes on, let's say a trade isn't made. I mean, he's going to be more desperate to get rid of Cliff Lee than Cole Hamels as the season progresses because of that, you know, just the amount of money owed annually to Lee. I think Lee could be a very achievable trade option, you know, during the season that might be better served than Cole Hamels and did at asking price be less.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could. I don't care. I mean, I definitely want you. My point is like you can. Everyone wants these players.
Yeah,
and I get it. But there's deals to be had by using the rest of the farm system.
Well, you know, and I think this goes back to you know why I have zero problem with the Red Sox you know spending a good amount of money for Yoan Moncada is you're adding. Yeah, you've just added the number one prospect to your farm system overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We talked about Swihart. I mean, like he's now on par with Swihart, 1-2, and they're both in the top 10 prospects of you know, in all of baseball.
Right.
Really what that cost you was a lot of money right now, which is essentially Dice K's posting fee. Right, that's the equivalent of what they've just done, right?
Right.
Okay, that $50 million, did that have any impact on the organization after they spent that $50 million? Did that hamper them in any way? And that's why I think like going out and spending a large signing bonus is a great way to leverage your financial muscle without compromising yourself by signing someone overextending for a free agent that is in 5 years going to cost you because you're paying someone $20 million that you shouldn't be, right? This is a great way, in my opinion, to spend money that other teams can't. It's riskier, right? You don't know what this guy's going to be, but I don't know. I mean, seems like he's got a better chance than most to be what people think he's going to be.
Right. I mean, it's no different. Now they have the slotting system, but it's no different than – I mean, what did Strasburg sign for? Like, he was – and I mean, he was older, but it was – I mean, that was back when they were getting these huge signing bonuses. It's no different than that. Exactly. You're just throwing money at the player. And that also kind of benefits the argument that I had in regards to Beckett. And again, I want to be clear, like anyone listening to this show, like I don't fault the Beckett deal. I just think, you know, like I would have loved to have had Beckett type and Hanley Ramirez, considering
cake
for the entire time that trade has been going on up until this past year, we've been looking for a shortstop.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. And I guess you could say that Hanley Ramirez has actually been a shortstop over that period of time too.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, I hear you. And it goes back. I guess we go back to the outfield, right? And just to kind of settle up on this is obviously between Victorino, Nava, Craig, Jackie Bradley Jr., there's going to be some, you know, unless Betts gets dealt for a pitcher, which, you know, that could happen, there's going to be some maneuvering around those players. And I would say that any which way it goes, okay. Right? Like, I would rather have it be Betts, Castillo, Ramirez, and that's it. They all play well up to their potential, and you don't have to worry about what you dealt off, what you did with those other pieces. They can all perform, you know, as your extra pieces.
Yeah, I don't. But that's where I disagree. I mean, I want that exactly what you said. It's just then if that's where the direction you're going to have to go, you have to move other pieces or cut ties with the player. I mean,
well, that's what I mean. Like, but if you move Nava versus Craig, eh. If you move Craig versus Nava,
yeah.
If you move Victorino versus Craig, eh. I don't care.
I don't.
You deal Jackie Bradley Jr. at this point. Like, I would love to. I actually would love to see Jackie Bradley Jr. be the fifth outfielder because I think there's tremendous value in having someone defensively. And if a player if Castillo goes down, right, I would love to know that at least I have Jackie Bradley Jr. as an everyday center fielder that's gonna field the position excellently, right? And I just think there's tremendous value in having that guy in the organization. But I also find it hard to believe he could be as bad as what he was last year for any extended period of time.
I don't know.
Given that he was the reason that we didn't re-sign Jacoby Ellsbury, remember?
Right. which I'm still okay with those decisions. And I'm actually okay with the direction that the team's going in. I don't know if you heard John Henry today, but you know they want to invest in 20-year-olds and they don't want to invest in 30-year-olds. I get it. I'm okay with it. Go back to the 3-year contracts with the 30-year-olds, get the right ones. I'm totally fine with it. As long as they're going to do the things that they're doing. The future is bright for this team, and the present is also pretty bright. This is the one year we have a big logjam. We just have a logjam of everything coming together.
Well, in the offense, right, and not so much in the rotation, right? Like, but I guess so. One question here is with respect to investing in 20-year-olds and not 30-year-olds is, you know, they've taken that philosophy to the pitching staff as well, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if realistically, unless you develop an ace, you're not going to find a 20-year-old ace, right?
But we don't develop aces here.
Well, I know, this is where we come into, at some point, Paul, and I think this is the exact same thing with a closer, right, is at some point they need to hit on mm-hmm. one of these pitchers. They hit on Lester and Papelbon, and, mm-hmm. like, look at how far those two guys, you know, for example, took them.
Right.
Like, if you could tell me that one of these guys is going to be a Lester and one of these guys is going to be a Papelbon, I would feel tremendously confident in where this organization sits for the next, you know, 6 or 7 years. So far, since Buchholz, and we can all argue what Buchholz is or isn't, they, you know, even the people they dealt haven't hit,
right?
As pitchers, mm-hmm. I just saw Casey Kelly coming off
Tommy John. Right?
Tommy John strained his groin. Is going to start. You know, now his start in AAA is questionable. Like, I mean, who knows if he'll ever pitch?
Right.
And he was the next big thing. And so, you know,
isn't Henry Owens though a legit next big thing? I mean, isn't
people are higher like baseball people are higher on. I don't even do what's the guy
Rodriguez
we got? We got for Andrew Miller from Baltimore than Henry Owens. They think he's got a higher ceiling. I mean, people slot. I know what we think of Henry Owens from what we were kind of hyped up to be told, but people don't slot him as a number one pitcher. People slot him as a 2 or 3.
Mm. Like, yeah, so it's Madison Bumgarner though.
But I guess this is my point: is if he becomes a one, that's great. But right now, like people around base, and this is what I don't understand around scouting pitchers, is it seems like when you first acquire them, right, the high-end guys have ace potential. But by the time they're ready for the major leagues, they're all number threes.
Because it's tough to be an ace in Major League Baseball. I mean, it's tough.
Does that come down to, is it the player development? Like, is it a player development issue within the organization, or is it just luck? Like, that you
yeah,
hit on
know.
The player in the in, like the right player, and they develop the right way. I just don't understand at this point, like what makes an organization good at producing major league pitchers that are ones and twos. You know, I just don't.
Yeah,
that's a
Billy Beane question, I guess. I mean, when you look, I mean, there's a organization that churns out great pitchers and gives them the ball young, you know, like the ace isn't someone that they go out and acquire. The ace is someone like, shit, we got rid of all our good pitchers. Here's the ball, kid. And all of a sudden have an ace.
The ace is the guy that we're going to have to pay next year. So we deal so that we can bring up the kid.
Right.
Billy Beane sees an ace and he trades it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I, it's,
But I come back to it. Like, at some point, they need to hit on one of those young guys. I mean, I think that's.
But you can't ever hit on it unless if you're like what
you
I would
give
rather.
Him a chance.
You gotta give him a chance. Like if you told me that Wade Miley and Justin Masterson went on this team, and we were going to give this, let's just say one of them. Yeah. But we were going to give the spot to Henry Owens, or we're going to give the spot to the guy that came in the Baltimore trade. That's the guy we're going to give the spot to. I'm almost more okay with that than signing one of those two guys or making the trade. Now, Miley's a good trade because we got rid of two guys that we kind of saw. One was a little, I mean, De La Rosa looked a little promising. Webster was, I don't know what, maybe he'll do really well over there, but he was never going to be anything, I thought. So, that was a good trade. I'm glad we got him. But, you know, you go and you sign Masterson. Why not give one of those guys a shot? You know, Masterson, what
comes
we got
down
with
to
Masterson?
Durability.
We got an all-star in 2013 and a guy in 2014 that was injured and was horrible and pitched one good game against the Red Sox. I think it was – I mean –
I think it comes down to, like, the one thing that a veteran arm can give you that a young arm can't
is
those extra two innings a game.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's the difference. I mean, that's what you pay the veteran for, and you don't like because you need those extra two innings. You need that assuredness that you can get that you don't, you know, tax the bullpen and then that, you know, see a down the line impact across, you know, the next like five games. It's the only thing I can think of is that you know, but just think about these young pitchers, Paul. You know that it's the guy whose name we can't remember that's going to be the one that's good, and that all the guys we know are going to be like total flameouts.
Yeah, isn't it Eduardo Rodriguez?
Eduardo Ramirez? Eduardo Rodriguez?
Yeah.
Whatever his name is, I know he's lefty, and supposedly he's damn good, Paul. But I do wonder, like we haven't even really touched on the bullpen, and we'll talk a little, you know, about that as we get closer to spring. Is like, you know, can Koji Uehara be your closer this year? Has he reset what went wrong at the end of last year? Do you trust him? If you don't trust him, or if he falters, do we have something to back that up, right? Or is that a market that we feel confident we can go acquire someone if we need it, right? The bullpen. Is it a strength? Is it a risk? To me, that's been kind of the under the radar, ignored part of this team offensively. Paul, like everything that I've seen, like projections, rankings, all this stuff. People think that the Boston Red Sox have the best offense in the American League.
Yeah,
that's kind of consensus opinion right now, and it's almost hard to argue.
I think you'd have a hard time arguing.
Yeah,
that.
And I mean, coming from what you saw last year, that's a pretty. I mean, you add Sandoval and Ramirez, and that I guess is not that hard of a jump. But if you were to tell me that midway through last season that don't worry, next year you'll have the best offense in baseball, I would be shocked.
Yeah, well, I mean, last year was just a cluster, right?
Yeah.
I mean, anything that went wrong last year, you know, went wrong. Jackie Bradley Jr., Victorino being hurt, Napoli, you know, dislocated his finger the first game or whatever it was, and he was never really quite the same. Middlebrooks being Middlebrooks, like it nothing panned out. So, Dustin Pedroia being hurt, jamming his, you know, like, I mean, so many different things went wrong. But yeah, I think you can look at this team and assume everyone's healthy and coming back. Yeah, it's going to be one of the best offenses in baseball.
So
I'm expecting a huge year from Pedroia, by the way. Huge.
I would love it. Love it. Let me throw this last question at you, Paul. The organization extends John Farrell and Ben Cherington.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know the status of Cherington's contract. Right, that's something you kind of never know if his extension was because this was his last year, but we know John Farrell's contract. He was under contract this year with a team option for next year. Smart move to extend both those guys right now and keep some organizational consistency over the next couple years. Unnecessary move, risky move. Thoughts?
What's I mean? Now, I mean. Charrington, you're not going to know his contract, but I don't care. If John Farrell sucks this year, they'll fire him anyways, and they'll eat 2 years of a contract.
That's what I was wondering. With all the uproar about why would you extend him, does this really prevent you from firing him if he sucks?
Yeah, no, I mean, so I think now could have they just went, all right, we're going to pick up your option, you know, so that way you're not a lame duck. They could have done that, but that's essentially all they did was add on another year. To me, it's just not a big deal.
And my guess is
it's not going to preclude them. They're not going to be like, shit, we're stuck with John Farrell now.
And generally, option years of contracts are probably of higher value, right, than what they negotiate. They probably took some of that option year, spread it to the next year, quite frankly, right? Like, that's generally how, you know, option years work, because there's a little bit of a balloon in the option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so a non-issue in your mind. I know it's. I mean, there was definitely some, you know, questioning of Red Sox management within the Felger and Maz circles with respect to the Farrell extension, right? A little over analysis.
I think they did a 4-hour show on it yesterday. It was like, I'm like, you talk about something else, never mind. I'm not going to critique other shows.
But all right, so here's the plan for the spring. At some point, we'll start to get some clarity as people take the field as to how this outfield is going to shake out. What moves may or may not be made. We'll see how. I think, unlike most spring trainings, Paul, this is a spring training where we actually have a position battle that there's some merit to. I think actually, maybe Tomasi wrote it or Eads. This is the first time since basically, I think it was 2008, where Coco Crisp and Ellsbury were battling for the center field position, that there's been an open position battle in spring training for starting spots.
Hmm.
I mean, if you think about it,
realistically,
I feel like maybe there was a chance that there was...
there had to be a Middlebrooks one.
Middlebrooks Euclid, but Euclid won that out of the gate pretty easily and then faltered mid-season. Yeah, I mean, pretty early. You know, but, like, I don't know that there has been really... It might be that long that there's been that, you know. So really, this is something that maybe it brings a little excitement for us here, Paul, to spring training. We have something to keep the pulse of. So we'll be monitoring that, kind of watching how that develops. And while we started the show with Yoan Moncada, we really didn't talk about him that much. I guess, you know, moving forward, we can touch on, as we hear more from Charrington and his plans for the player. Obviously, physicals haven't happened yet, so he has been pretty close-mouthed until that deal becomes official and physicals are cleared. After that, I think you'll start to hear a little bit more from Charrington about, where he sees Moncada fitting. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll touch more on that. But we'll break position by position, kind of strengths and weaknesses, and compare our rotation against the AL East and our offense against the AL East, and kind of see where we slot this season. But, you know, I think, as with most spring trainings, Paul, I'm feeling fairly optimistic about where this team can head this year.
It's the beauty of the spring.
That's right. And we'll see if it's another 2013 or another 2014 as the year progresses. But until then, Paul, it's been episode number 159 of Fireside Chat. We'll talk soon.